The future belongs to those who control the culture, and the culture belongs to those who control the conversation. So we are having the conversations you wish you could have at church to build a safe and vibrant community. This is the Oz Table Talk Podcast.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Oz Table Talk. My name is Luke and as usual, I am at the table with Steve and Emerson.
Yep.
Hey, hey. How are things, gentlemen?
Very good.
We try to be prepared for episodes. Today is one of those days where we were not as prepared as we wish that we were.
And so it's going to be a good one.
It's going to be fantastic.
Some of our best episodes have been the ones where we were just like, let's do this. Shooting from the hip.
Accurate. So we have been interviewed, you could say. We've got a rapid fire round of questions from AI.
From our fearless overlords.
And we're gonna riff on them and see where we go.
They're actually good questions. Like, we were looking for inspiration, and then they listed out all these questions. Like, these are all good.
Yeah,
let's do all.
Just do all of the things. All of the things. If a little bit is good for you, then a lot is better, right?
That's right.
A lot of it.
Yes. So awesome. So without further ado, the first question that we have is: what is the dumbest thing you believed about God as a kid?
Oh man.
Do you have anything that like stands out to you?
I can't remember that far back. That's my problem.
I was just trying to think. Like, I think the things that I thought about God as a kid is probably just like intense literalism. Like, you know, that, you know, the things that are symbolic were real. I think the first time I read Revelation, I was like... dude, like, where do these beasts come from? Like, I'm thinking these are going to be actual biological things that, like, for a little bit there. And then, that was short lived.
Peeking about the frogs.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember ever.
You were just right forever.
Like, critically analyzing. Like, as a kid, you just kind of go, oh, yeah, okay.
I accept it. It's just, it is.
Yeah, a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
All right.
Yeah, I look at my kids now and like I've played this game with them the other day where I got their toys and made their toys ask them about Jesus. So that, and then they started sharing the gospel with their toys. So I called the game Disciples. I said, let's play Disciples. And like, how do we play Disciples? So that's where you share the gospel with your friends. And so I went and got their toys and blah, blah, blah. And they like broke down everything that they knew. And that was all correct, you know. Awesome. Like, they didn't know that much, but what they did know was right.
That's cool.
Know? So I was like, nice. And they had fun, and it was, you know, the best way to learn is to teach. So I was sort of like, oh, if I can get them to say it,
yeah,
then they'll hopefully understand it better. And I think it worked. But looking back on my own experience, yeah, I don't know.
Right,
I don't know.
Let's try.
I know there's a few things. I just don't know what they were.
Yeah, I feel like I've got a couple of real good ones, but they're not coming to me. They're not coming to me. All right, let's do question two. Question two. If you could delete one church tradition, what would it be?
You have to be ordained to baptize.
Oh, okay.
Get rid of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see any value in that, or do you think just like on the whole, that is just a...
I just think it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I think if you do Bible studies with someone to the point that they understand the gospel and want to give their life to God and they ask you, can I be baptized? Mm-hmm. You should be able to baptize them. Mm. You shouldn't have to go to your pastor and say, hey, you know, can you baptize them? And also, you mind if I come in the water with you because, you know, he's my friend or whatever, you know? That's ridiculous. Like, you sign them up for membership if you're the pastor, sure, you know?
Yeah.
But anyone should be able to, you're getting someone wet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Because I agree in principle that it shouldn't have to be a pastor, but I do see why why the church mandates it that way, right? And from the perspective of, you know, there are some people that are, you know, either the people doing the baptizing or the people who are being baptized that are doing it for crazy reasons and kind of cheapening the experience in some way or teaching wrong or you know, whatever those you know, variables mm-hmm. are. Humans are crazy beings, and so having some level of structure to it, I see value in that. But I can see the overarching principle.
Yeah, and I get that, and I think that you should either, you know, have the pastor okay it for you, or the church vote on it, or whatever it is.
Yeah, okay, so you're but not against the checks and balances.
Anyone should be allowed to baptize them. That's crazy to say only the ordained pastor is allowed to go and get wet and dunk them.
Yeah, I reckon if you're a regular, like if you're a baptized regular church member of in good standing in the church, that's the church should just recognize it.
That's right, mm-hmm. and they do. That's how churches are.
Yeah,
that's just inherently how they are set up.
Yeah,
you know. Mm-hmm. So, that's a good one.
Mm. What about you, Steve?
Oh, that's a tricky one because okay, so I'm head deacon this year, but I've had this chat before I was head deacon, but the whole offering has to be taken up by deacons mm-hmm. and also by dudes. Like, mm-hmm. who cares?
Yep.
Apparently everyone does.
Oh, really?
But,
but they won't let ladies do that job?
Well, I don't know. I haven't pushed that point, but I just give it to the kids. And I spoke to Pastor Luke, and he explained it to me, which is fair, in that they've had experiences where people who aren't trustworthy have been asked to do it, and then like a significant amount of money have gone missing, mm-hmm. and then they've traced it back and been like, oh, it was this person, and then they admit it.
So yeah, you've got to have an elected treasurer for sure, but
oh no, like it's
the
not
person
the
who's
fault.
Collecting
as in it,
it
disappears.
They're flogging
before
it gets into the
how.
I don't know.
There's some fast hands.
Yeah.
That's sneaky, wild. Sneaky.
So I see that, but I don't know. The way I kind of get around that is generally I'm doing it anyway, but I just, you know, like I give it to the kids all the time, like the, you know, the 12, 13-year-old guys.
Yeah.
I'll just grab them.
I don't think is that a thing where only ordained deacons are allowed to collect offering? That's not been a thing at any church I've ever gone to.
Yeah, well, at Hinkler, I generally only deacons will do it. I mean, whether they're ordained yet or not I don't think there's a hard
there's
fast rule
in like
about
a that. trusted role, I guess. The church is saying they trust them.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole girls thing, I made a joke about it to one of the older guys because he was trying to hand it out and there weren't enough guys. So I'm like, oh, just give it to, give it to her. He's like, no. I'm like,
okay.
But you want someone to do it and they're here and why not? And he's like, no.
It's funny, the tradition that that I was going to point out is actually attached to that.
Yeah.
Why do we collect it?
Offering.
Yes.
Yeah.
During COVID.
It is awkward.
During COVID, we stopped doing it and we put a box at the door. Our offerings went up.
That's how we do it at Bush Church.
But after it was over, I was like, oh, thank you. We're just going to leave it that way now. Like,
just skip it.
Fantastic. And at some point there was a board meeting and, you know, one of the dear mature saints said,
but it's so much better when we pick it up.
Finally, we can go back to like getting offering the right way. I'm like,
the hard way that
the
takes
holy
time.
Way.
Yeah. That actually takes time out
time
of the service.
Effort.
Yes.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. So that's crazy. That always irritates me.
Yeah.
I do find that frustrating. However, and as much as I get annoyed, not annoyed, I should say, but taking it up all the time does get a little bit frustrating. But I do know a lot more church members' names and I like have like mini conversations with them, which is probably frowned upon too, but I'll be like, hey, good to see you today. Or like, thanks guys.
Yeah.
Like, so I kind of have like,
it's, well, a, as it's you're an taking interaction.
Yeah, I got like a mint last week. Yeah. It was great. I got like a breath mint. the offering.
You were supposed to put that in, man. That was part of the
time. You're the one who's been skimming with the fast hands.
Yeah, just boop, pop it through.
Took a $2 coin in your mouth.
That does not freshen your breath.
It was just a mint.
I cheeked it.
I know this is distracting. I'm going to jump up again because I can see us peeking out on the audio meters.
Fix it. Another one. I reckon that the Sabbath school should be after the main service. It's so much better that way.
Yeah.
We all, like, a lot of churches are going to that setup. It's just getting it past, the traditional.
We tried it for a little while a few years ago. I don't know why they reverted back, but they just didn't like it, so they went back.
Was it better? Like, did you enjoy it more?
It doesn't bother me.
You know what's? It's a lot better to have people showing up late to a sermon than to a Bible study. That's my main one.
Because subs are so awkward, eh? It's like 10:15. You're like,
that's right.
How am I going to catch up on 45 minutes?
That's right. And everyone's showing up late. Or you start the Sabbath school with like one person and then they roll in as you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never ran Sabbath school classes at any church until I went to Raymond Terrace. And it was always that way. And then when I went to Raymond Terrace, I spent like 5 years taking Sabbath school classes.
Yeah.
And then I've come to this church and I'm taking Sabbath school class and I've never had this experience where you're like, oh, there's nobody here. Do I start now or do I wait for more people? It's really awkward and uncomfortable. Whereas if you're up the front preaching, people can roll in. It's fine. People are showing up. Generally, if you're showing up late to church, you miss a couple of prelims or announcements or songs or whatever. And it's not that bad.
Big deal, yeah.
But and the other thing is your mind is more switched on after the main service because you sit there and you listen to a sermon and it puts you into a spiritual place to then go and have a spiritual conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing it backwards. We're having the spiritual conversation. Nobody interacts. Nobody chats. Like, it's just me trying to lead out and nobody saying anything, which is, that never happened at Raymond Terrace. Mm-hmm. And then
you need to fire some of your members.
Hey,
fire some of your members.
What?
You're banned.
They're not fired. They're not employees. They're members.
That's it. But like, you're not going to interact with me. Well, then go to another class.
That was tongue in cheek.
That was tongue in cheek.
Anyway, at Raymond Terrace Church, they did it the other way around, and you would have a really deep, heavy conversation because everyone was in that spiritual mindset and everyone was already there.
Yeah.
So much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, nice better again,
we're
maybe.
Really missing out. Like, we're really missing out on a good Sabbath school experience.
Because we tried breakfasts for the teens, but even that wouldn't help. So we had like cereal and toast and yeah, and it's hard to be consistent with that too, as well, we found hard to be consistent.
Depending on who's there, yeah.
But then they know breakfast there, so they'll come late anyway.
Can I throw one really controversial one before we move on to the next question?
Yeah, yeah, you haven't thrown one.
Stay on this one all night.
I threw one, the tithe one. Let's not collect that at all.
Offering, yeah.
But I was having a very interesting conversation with a pastor this week, and he doesn't do... he doesn't do Bible studies anymore. When he first said that, I was like, excuse me? Like, what do you mean you don't do Bible studies anymore? He goes, no. He said, here's what I do. He said, I have done like a series of podcast Bible studies with a friend of mine. Like, you know, and you know, we have the banter, we explain the concepts and all the rest of it. And he said, when someone wants to be baptized or they want to do Bible studies or whatever, we set a time to catch up each week. And like their homework is to listen to the episode. And then he said, if they have any questions, they ask me about it. And he said, so those, rather than spending an hour, like, you know, 50 minutes of the hour teaching them something, we can talk for the hour about any questions that they had. And I can actually interact with them around their real life for the whole hour rather than like the 10 minutes before we leave. And he said, he said it works amazingly well. He said, people love
that. That's cool.
And he said, because then rather than I'm being their teacher, I turn into more of their coach and their friend. So I can like coach them how to live out the Christian life rather than spending all of my time just imparting data. Data, you can do async. You don't need to be in person to deliver data anymore. And I was like,
there you go.
I said to him, how would that work even in a church setting? Because like, what if we did that with our sermons? What if the expectation was that everyone listened to the podcast through the week, caught the sermon there and showed up to church just to discuss it and have community? And he's like, I know. I think he said he knew that there's a church that does that somewhere. You know, like that's something that does work. And obviously,
well, that's essentially what happens if you swap it around. Like I was just saying,
yeah,
you do the sermon first and then the class.
Yeah. But, so anyway,
yeah,
interesting thoughts. But this is just technology being technology, right?
Yeah.
Just disrupting the way that we do things.
Yeah, 100%.
Doesn't mean that it. Yeah. Anyway, I would actually be very curious to like try a church plant under those principles and see like how people respond to it or what kind of people respond to it. Anyway. All right. So, what Bible character would you not want to be? Well, aside from Enoch, Elijah and Moses, they're all dead, so I'd kind of prefer to not be any of them.
Like, as in what, like, bad things happen to them or their mindset? Wouldn't really want to be Jonah. He seemed pretty messed up in the head.
Most successful evangelist in history who didn't want to be.
Yeah, that's right. Who was so angry that he was successful.
Yeah. God, I knew you were going to be merciful. How dare you? Like, oh.
Yeah. Curse you for making me such a good preacher.
Honestly, I think some of the people that I would hate to be are the ones like, who was it? Was it Joash? Like the characters where you see them like have a strong early start.
And
you know who I'd hate to be in that is Samson.
Yeah.
Oh, he had such potential, didn't he?
Oh,
man.
Yes. Yes.
And then he went so wrong, and then he got done dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And then dies young anyway.
He just had such potential. He could have been, he could have been the greatest Bible character ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Good point. I feel like Solomon is another character similarly, right?
Yeah.
Like, whilst I think he learnt some of those lessons, it did irreparable damage to his psyche in the process.
Yeah. If you read,
Ecclesiastes.
Ecclesiastes is like, yeah. This guy has got issues.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Compared to his father's writings and Psalms, and you go,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was the wisest, the wisest of the wise.
Yeah, yeah. Wisdom's a curse, hey? Mm. Far out.
All right, well,
a lot of Bible characters. There's a lot that you wouldn't want to be.
Mm-hmm. Ananias and Sapphira.
Lot.
Yeah. Oh.
Jezebel.
Oh.
Jezebel.
Yeah.
That's what it was like. Yeah. That'd be a hard pass.
Yep. Well, I think, and so many, even the good characters, like, or like the famous characters, had such like horrible experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
with Jeremiah.
Yeah.
That would suck.
Yeah.
Bit rough.
Let me chuck you in a well.
You're doing all the right stuff, and you it just sucks. It's no good. It's just, I shouldn't say it's no good, but like it's just continual suck.
Yeah. Well, Isaiah, you know, in the not in the Bible, but in the the external literature, they reckon that he was put in a log and sawn in two.
Mm.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been fun.
Mm.
NASA was it? No, who did it to?
NASA. They just launched the Artemis this morning.
Manasa.
Oh, Manasa.
Mumble NASA is what I said. Yeah, who then converted and became a follower of God.
Mm.
So if I get to heaven, I'm going to try and find those two and see what happens when they meet up.
Wouldn't that be crazy, right?
Isaiah's like, you're here. You sawed me in half.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry I did that. I'm just glad you're here.
I often think exactly the same thing about Paul and Stephen.
Yes.
Paul's there holding people's cloaks while they murder Stephen.
Yep.
And so he's one of the last people Stephen sees. And then Stephen gets to heaven. It's like, hey, God.
Are you sure?
It's like, oh, he wrote half the Bible, man.
You were the
like,
most influential Bible writer ever?
Yeah.
Like, what?
So what, here's a fun
one. Well, can we flip that on its head and say who would you want to be?
Yeah, let's do that.
I'm going to say Daniel.
Ooh.
Daniel had it pretty good. I mean, he had it rough there at the beginning, you know? He was tried and tested, you know?
Yeah.
But then he lived out his life in, you know, the royal mansion.
Yeah.
The richest nation in the world. He had it pretty good.
Yeah. Well, by the same token.
Literal visions of the throne room of God. Come on now. That's cool.
That's pretty out there. Two come to mind for me. I would say the first one that came to mind was Joseph.
Yep.
Because again, some really
very similar,
rough experience. But yeah, he. I feel like he lived a really full life, right? Like, you know, he had a lot of bad happen, but yeah, he had that integrity.
He was in prison for a long time.
Yeah.
Slave.
But he came out. Anyway, the other one that I had in mind was the Apostle John. So
yeah.
I feel like the...
Yeah, you know, he might still be alive.
With Epstein hiding somewhere, hey?
What? Why would he be with Epstein?
No, just that. The conspiracy of
not
people.
Not all conspiracies have to do with Epstein.
No, I'm just saying.
Are you sure?
People who are still alive that we think are dead.
Yeah. Yeah, like Elvis,
Tupac. Elvis, yeah. They're all with John.
Yeah.
It's like, I was the first.
Are you referencing the Bible verse that says, yeah, what is it to you if I decide that he should live till I come? Is that
Remember, we played one of the reels when we used to do reels and feels with this guy laying out how he reckons John's still alive.
I forgot about this. Okay.
Immortal sort of.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, sorry for the...
The reason that I said that, really any of the disciples apart from Judas, but I picked John the beloved disciple, right? And also got to have visions, etc. But the reason that I say that is that all of the disciples, once they had gone through that experience with Jesus, they were all locked in to the degree that they were willing to travel the world and die. And what they went through so foundationally transformed them.
They were filled with the Holy Spirit.
That'd be great. And that would just be I couldn't imagine a more meaningful experience.
Like, and if you had to pick one of the disciples, you'd pick John because they tried to boil him and he's just like, nice hot tub.
Yeah. I wonder if that's true. I mean,
I don't know. I hope it is.
I hope it is.
It's a cool story.
Yeah. It's like, we can't boil you, so we're just going to send you to an island.
That's right.
Die there.
Yeah. Again, visions of the throne room of God would be fantastic.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
The other, I had a cheats answer at the very beginning of this question. I just wanted to say Enoch.
Mm. Yeah. Enoch's probably the right answer.
Yeah. Like, live a nice, quiet life, share your experience with God with others, you know, spend a lot of time in nature, go to heaven, no death, you know, get to spend eternity with God. Like, okay, yep, sign me up.
If I was Enoch, I'd screw it up and then I'd just die.
As a kid, I used to think to myself, what if I could, could I mimic that? There's nothing that says that there'll never be another Enoch. Mm. And how do we know there weren't other ones?
Nothing that says there weren't other Enochs.
Yeah, that's right. And so I wondered that as a kid, could I be that guy? You know,
that sounds a little bit like Buddhism, or like you're trying to get to the higher plane of existence. Not that it's a bad thing to strive for, but that's what it kind of, I don't know.
It doesn't seem, with
Enoch and Elijah and Moses, it doesn't seem like they were trying to get that result.
No.
It's interesting. I don't know, this is a bit of a fan theory, but like you look at Enoch and Elijah and it says with Enoch that he walked with God and then he was taken to heaven. Mm. And then with Elijah, you look through all the stories about him and you're like, all right, well, this guy was solid. Like, he never stuffed up. He never made a mistake. And so God took him to heaven. Sweet as, you know. And then with Moses, it's like God's like, all right, I'm taking him to heaven. And Satan's like, whoa, really? You know? And they had to argue with Satan to take him to heaven because Moses, he screwed up
more than once. And isn't it interesting that the main thing that gets flagged is not the fact that he murdered someone?
Yeah, he hit a rock.
Yeah, it's like you hit the rock, Moses. That's right.
But it's not that he murdered someone. It's that his main issue was his temper.
Yeah.
And I think God is saying, Moses, you have a temper, you know, and that led to the murdering the Egyptian and the striking the rock and smashing the Ten Commandments. And he had a temper, you know, and that was always his issue, was he had a temper. But also when God said, that's it, I'm going to destroy these people, I'm going to start over with you. Because it says, we were studying this at Bush Church in Exodus 34. I don't remember where it is. 34 sounds right.
I think it is.
And God's like, that's it, I'm going to destroy these people, I'm going to make of you a great nation. He says that to Moses, what he said to Abraham. And it's almost like God's going, all right, it didn't work out, let's start again with this guy.
But you know, like that though, what you just said just gave me a whole new thing on that. It just occurred to me.
But my point, finish my point, is Moses, even though he had the temper, was like, no, God, have mercy on these people. You know, you knew that they were a hard-headed people, stiff-necked people, he says.
Okay. There's something really important there. Do you think God actually was out of control in his anger?
No.
Of course not.
No.
So whose benefit was the anger for?
I think he's like role playing for Moses.
Yeah. Like I feel like he's demonstrating to Moses' own inadequacies, and Moses is intervening and learning that lesson.
Mm.
Like I don't think that God was like, oh, like, yeah, hold me back. Let me at him. You know, like,
I think it was also for the benefit of the Israelites themselves, because they had been pretty spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd been rescued from the Egyptians, and God saved them when he destroyed the Egyptian army in the Red Sea, right? But it still wasn't, they still didn't have, because in God's effort to engrave himself into their culture, he saved them, right? And that was the whole thing. He was like, I'm trying to show you that I'm not just the creator, I'm the savior. And then he saves them from Egypt. And they say, it'd be better to be back in Egypt, right? Mm-hmm. And so then he almost allows them to create this golden calf idol. And like, just like the worst thing that you could possibly do. Like we were going over it in Bush Church last week, and it was a really good study, but like what they did was the worst thing you could do,
mm-hmm.
you know? God's literally with them, and they're like, let's make a God to worship and he can go before us. It's like, what are you doing? They're rebelling, right? And we see that if you ever had a atheist come to you and say, I would believe in God if he just revealed himself to me.
Yes.
Right? Like, yeah, you would, but you would instantly rebel against him because that's history shows us, right? So, like, you look at the Tower of Babel, right? There's no atheists in the Tower of Babel, right? It's a few generations after the flood. Do you think anyone didn't believe that God was real? Of course not.
They were literally trying to protect themselves from God.
That's right.
That's literally their objective. There's no atheists
when people rebel against God, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone in that Israelite camp knew that God was real. They just didn't know that he was merciful and caring and loving, right?
Yeah.
And so then he allows them to do this horrible, egregious, wicked thing, and then has mercy on them. And he meets in the tent with Moses, and they discuss it. And he says to Moses, all right, I'm not going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And that from that point on, they don't rebel again until
mm-hmm.
generations Later. Pass. But that generation don't rebel against God again. Because they've seen his love and his mercy in that he actually forgave them for this thing that they did. And they were chewing on that for the rest of their lives, literally chewing on it because Moses fed them the golden calf and made them drink it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, crazy story. Crazy story.
Anyway, little rant.
Yes.
Back to the questions.
All right, next question. This is a fun one. What is the worst Christian dating advice you've ever heard? Like I feel like the obvious one that's like straight out in my brain is, oh, you just need to marry someone from the same church. And that means you're equally yoked.
Yeah. Yeah, sort of narrows the pool down.
Well, no.
Wait, you mean like the same denomination or the same church?
The same denomination,
yeah,
sorry.
Okay. I was going to say the same church.
Hey. I was talking to somebody and I imagine it would be okay to share, but for privacy, I won't tell it, say who it was or what context I had this conversation. But a person from a Christian church, not our denomination, different denomination, but they were saying that in their culture, they're not allowed to marry people from the same congregation that they're at. And if they want to marry somebody from the same denomination, they kind of have to go through the pastors of other churches to kind of like advertise or like have like a matchmaking service. Like, go to your pastor, have a conversation. He calls the pastor of another congregation. He's like,
crazy.
Hey, you know, I've got a 27-year-old, you know, male plumber who is, keen to get married. Do you have any like corresponding females over there that we might be able to introduce?
Why aren't we doing that already?
Seems like it works.
I was like,
sounds good to me.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know issues with it.
Yeah.
Different cultures find their spouses in different ways.
Yes.
And if you find your spouse and you love them, it doesn't matter how you met each other. You know, like the Bible has arranged marriages,
mm-hmm.
People that fall in love. Mm-hmm. You got, Hosea bought his wife. Esther was chosen from a beauty pageant, right?
Yep.
Like, there's no...
Rebecca with mail order.
Yeah, mail order, that's right. go out and find my son a wife, you know? It's like, I think the lesson from the Bible is there's no way to do it. Mm-hmm. Just love your wife and respect your husband. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know? And it doesn't matter how you get there, as long as you're there.
It does matter.
Just not your cousin.
Yeah. No, it matters who it is, but I don't think it matters how you get there.
So I'm thinking automatically of extremes. I know you're not meaning extremes, right?
Well, I'm saying if you get to the place where the wife respects the husband fully and the husband loves the wife fully,
but what
that is
the point I'm getting
the perfect
at
marriage
is the ends don't justify the means is what I'm meaning. Like, I mean, if you abducted your wife, you know, and then if she turns out to love you 15 years from now, like that doesn't mean that
it
was a great idea.
That doesn't mean that it was the right way to do it.
No, but it did work. Are you still saying the ends justify the means?
No, I'm not saying. What I'm saying is if you did that, right?
Yes.
And you knew it was wrong and it worked.
Mm.
And then you go out and say, this worked for me, so therefore this is how you should do it too.
Mm.
That's wrong.
Mm-hmm. It was still wrong what they did.
Yes, of course it's wrong.
Okay, that's all I'm saying.
But I'm saying that it worked out for you, right?
Yes.
And so therefore saying that that's the way to do it now is
therefore
wrong.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Right? Like, yep. Like I had someone...
This is so not where I thought this question was going.
I had someone tell me, like, this is how I did it. I observed women from a distance for a very long time. And when I finally seen one that I thought was worthy... I pursued her for many years and finally married her. And they got married when they were like in their mid-30s. And then, you know, couldn't have kids because they were too old. And they were like, this worked well for me, so this is the way to do it. Right?
Mm.
I'm like, okay, it worked well for you. But that's not the way to do it.
Yeah.
You know? Like saying that this worked for me, so this is how you need to do it. Mm-hmm. That's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Do you have any to add? Like I said, this I don't know why this question did not go where I thought it
would. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of bad Christian dating advice.
You ever heard of the book I Kissed Dating Goodbye?
Yes.
Yes.
I think that's bad Christian
dating advice. Yeah.
That book created a whole generation of single Christians.
Yeah. Well, not even that. Like, I was a big devotee of Joshua Harris. Like, I read that book when it came out, loved it, you know, like, and I was like, yeah, like, you know, mid-teens, like, you know, woo. And I, like, some of the principles, like the ideas in there of, oh, you know, you want to, you know, take relationships seriously and the idea of you want to, you know, you're dating someone for the purpose of marrying them. It's not a recreational exercise. Like those things I still agree with, but the application of that book is horrible.
Mm.
You know, like it was awful. And so you know, you can see that in his deconstruction and departure from the church and, you know.
And then he denounces the very book that he wrote and said, Don't
read it. Yeah.
Like, really, just don't read this book. I was so wrong.
But I think that's one of the things that, bad Christian dating advice. We sometimes get so fixated on we get so fixated on the means that we forget about the objective. Like you were saying, like the objective is a healthy marriage that reflects the relationship of that God wants his people to have with him. Right.
I think the mistake is to only date someone after you've decided that you know them well enough to pursue them for marriage.
Mm.
And instead of dating people to get to know them,
to
see if you
question.
Want to actually answer the question.
Yeah.
Because then it slows the whole process down so far.
Yeah.
To the point that now you can either only date people that you've known for a long time.
Yeah.
In which case it's weird and uncomfortable. You know? And you know everything about this. This is what happened with your wife, right? You asked her out heaps of times, but she'd known you forever. And so she didn't want to, and then eventually she gave in, right? So you know, you've known this person for ages, and so now you don't want to date them because you know them so well and they're a friend, or you don't know them well enough to date them.
Yeah.
And you get stuck in this place where you have no options anymore instead of dating to get to know people, which is the way you should do it.
I think that's generally good advice, so long as, like, it's situational, because if you don't know someone at all, then how you date them changes. Mm-hmm. In that, like, when Rachel and I were dating, we already knew each other, we already knew each other's families.
Mm.
So the way we dated was a lot more intentional. And
I think it worked out great for you guys.
And it looked different.
I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the way it happened for you. What I'm saying is...
No, I get what you're saying.
She didn't feel comfortable because she'd known you for so long.
No, I totally get that. But if you, like, say you and Jasmine were talking for a bit, but, like, say if someone, like, didn't know, like summer camp, like, I know that, you know, a lot of people meet at summer camp. You don't really know each other, so you start dating. But then the way you date is very different to the way that people who know each other have dated, which I know is a bit obvious, but, you know, group dates are a lot more important because you're actually trying to get to know the person as a person, not just like, can I marry this person?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jasmine and I was a completely different story because I don't think we've ever chatted to each other one single human word where we weren't interested in each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the only reason we ever talked in the first place, was like, I was like, let me get to know this girl. Maybe I can marry her one day.
Yeah.
Which I was doing with like several girls at the time, you know, because you're trying to get to know girls to say, play wife material.
Yeah.
I mean, and like, a lot of them, I was like, no, thanks.
Sarah was my first relationship. But at the having said that, like, also same for us, like by the time I met her, I'd already heard about her from other people. And so I already had a context of I'm romantically evaluating this person, you know, by the time I actually met her in the first place. And she, for it was same for her. And so when we met, even though we were, you know, we were friends for, you know, a year after we met, like we were checking each other out, like, you know, figuring that what
doing
that was going to
be. Doing the dance.
Yeah, doing the dance. Right? But there were, like yourself, there were plenty of girls that I had spoken to before that, but I didn't have peace in my heart over any of them because I'm like, oh, there's things about those that... I could see in a relationship format that was not going to work for me. And so even though Sarah was my first relationship, there were plenty of girls that I sort of entertained that idea and has been like, nope, like this is not going to work. So anyway. That's one I just read. Would Jesus have social media?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm. Would Jesus have, can you see Jesus being like, you know,
I can't think of any reason why
tag me
wouldn't.
On socials.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of any reason why he wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Would you caveat that as to how he would use it?
I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't. yeah, of course. But I mean, social media, in the idea that it's supposed to be, you're socializing online, which shouldn't be much different than socializing. The difference is, well, it's sort of like when Facebook first came out, it was like people were giving friend requests to people that they'd never met before because it's like, oh, well, this is social media. I'm supposed to get to know people.
This is how we do it.
Yeah, this is how we meet people. I'm meeting people online and chatting to them and telling them about my life to what it is now. And not, people don't really use Facebook so much anymore because there's all the other big ones that have taken over. But, you know, it was the first. So you go... That's what it was then, and to now, it's just like people putting pictures of, this is my life, so you can see what I'm doing, and not really. The older people on Facebook still sort of interact that way.
Yeah, I feel like Facebook has become like how you interact with your family, you know, or your like the people that are, you know, that's for, you know, Aunt Jean, you know,
and life updates.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people like, I'm going to post this because it will hopefully influence someone to be more like me and to think the way that I think. You know, it's...
You just felt pain, didn't you?
It's influence. Oh, it's influence media.
Yeah.
Copy and paste into your bio.
Oh, I just seen this picture with a quote and flowers in the background, and I'm going to post it because I agree with it, and hopefully other people will be more like me.
Yeah. You know? Well, the thing that I have noticed, and I'm not. This is not an original thought. There's plenty of people who have said this before me, but we have now traversed a gap in social media history where at the beginning, as you were accurately describing, it was for the purpose of being social. It was social media. It was you following somebody because you wanted to see the things that they posted about their life and you wanted to know more and connect more with that person. That's how it started. The problem is you have a beast that you need to feed, theoretically, you know, metaphorically, the companies that build these things. And the way they figured that they were going to feed that beast was by advertising. And so by feeding the beast by people paying ads, it got progressively more and more and more in the direction of not being social media, but interest media. Mm-hmm. So now the algorithms dictate what you see. Very little of it is actually from anyone you know in real life.
That's right. So you're not getting influenced.
You're not. Yeah, no.
Into becoming anything more less than a more version of yourself.
It's creating an echo chamber.
Extra version.
Yeah. It's creating an echo chamber. So if there was a social media feature or feed that I could turn on that would just show me stuff from my friends, actual friends.
Like another wall.
I would be all over that. But the algorithm.
But you'd never use it. You'd always use the algorithm.
Well, that's why I look at stories more than I do reels and stuff. Yeah. Because the stories more often are actually people. They put ads in there too, but like more often are the people that you are connecting with.
I get that. I look at stories every now and then as well. And I enjoy it. But I think that if I had the option to go look at what my friends are doing or look at the funny videos from the funniest people on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I'd never look at my friend's stuff ever. You know?
Do you find that has a limit though? Like, do you ever feel like, you know, the binge and purge cycle?
Yeah, about 5 hours, I think. I go, all right, I need to turn this off. No, I'm joking. Yeah. No, yeah, there is.
Yeah, because I'm going through this at the moment where I'm like, and it's hard to not get absorbed in that. But I'm tapering back how much I doom scroll, like by a huge margin, and it is so much better for my mental health. Like I was really sick of it, and I think that if there was more of actual people posting, and I think that's one of the reasons why you used to go and check your friends' Instagram feeds because you wanted to see what the post had. No one posts anymore. No. I've got heaps of friends that have fully empty grids.
Mm.
And the last photo on there was from COVID or something. Yes. Right? Like it's like
because it's become an influence based thing. It's people go on there not to socialize but to influence.
Mm. But you're consuming. It's a consumption thing.
Yeah.
People
or to be influenced.
Yeah, to be influenced. That's right. Anyway,
it's an influence thing. So you've got you've got the customers and you've got the suppliers.
Yeah. The thing that I love about social media, when I feel good about social media, is if I have like done something hard and I've created something and I'm sharing that with the world.
Mm.
That makes me feel good, right? Like, I built this, or here's a story that I'm telling. Or
I got 20 views on my video. So sad.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and then nobody appreciates it. That's the worst.
I built a cool thing.
You know what? I think the last true social media is forums, I think.
Mm.
Because if you go on a forum, you go,
Reddit.
I have an issue with my car. That you all also own this same car.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my issue. And has this happened before? Does anyone know what it is? And then you'll interact with people that you don't know and you'll meet them in a way, in the social media way. And you're discussing a shared common interest.
Yeah.
So forums are good.
Yeah.
You still get it.
Because Sarah is into fish, right? You know, and so she's a part of all these little fishy groups. And so she posts. She posts on there, you know.
They call them schools.
Seems. Nice. I was about to make a joke as well, but it wasn't as good.
Yeah, that one was solid. Absolutely solid. So she posts on there like, I have too many catfish. Would someone like to buy my catfish, right?
Yep.
And this guy reaches out. Yeah, he comes over. buy some catfish.
Kid food.
I have come for your
home for soup.
we make exchange. Anyway, this guy, turns out he was a, like, he spent a bunch of his career as like a bodyguard in Thailand or something. And, you know, he, anyway, this guy has a long story attached to him. But the fact of the matter is, while Sarah's catching fish, we're sitting around having a conversation about the fish, but then about his life and about whatever, and then he goes home. He sends us a message a couple of weeks ago, and it's like, hey, you know, because it was through the week and my boys were home, and he's like, oh, is it no school today? And it was like, oh, actually, homeschooled. They've already finished for the day, you know. And he's like, oh, okay, interesting. And so anyway, fast forward a few weeks ago, sends a message. He's like, I've been thinking about this, you know, my son's having some issues at school and I really think that homeschool might be an option. Never really thought about it till I saw you guys. And I'm just curious how that works. Can I come over to your place and we can have a chat? And we're like, sure, no problem, you know. But community, that's like where I think
forums.
Social media, that's where forums work.
Forums,
right?
Work good. Yeah, very good. So it still exists, I think. In its proper way through forums.
But so would
we have
Jesus
completely missed the question? Fully into the social media chat.
Not in its current form. I think that he'd be on like Messenger. So like you know, because that's basically what I use. Messenger's just like what's the youth group doing or what's the running.
I reckon
doing.
The disciples would for sure. They'd be posting. See what Jesus did.
Yeah, YouTube channel. Yeah.
Hashtag miracle.
Hey everybody, this is Barabbas. Barnabas. blind Barnabas. He can see everyone. You know, Barnabas, tell everyone what happened.
All right, cool. Well, I would agree. I think he would perhaps be present, like for the sake of connection, but not.
Yeah.
I just can't see him taking selfies on the beach. I just don't see that being in character.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about this must have been last Monday after touch, because there was a couple of injuries, not on our team. And it's just the nature of the game. Like, no one was being malicious, but a couple of people got hurt. And I was walking back to the car thinking, I wonder if Jesus would be playing touch. Like, would he have been playing touch with us tonight if he was here? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't see why not. But
I can also see an argument.
I wonder how he. I don't like, and I'm in no way saying that sport is bad, but I was just wondering how or what that would look like. Like, because we're all competitive, we all get, frustrated or, like, oh, we're going to get this try. Like, you're kind of mad at the ref because he's making all these bad calls. But, like, you're not like mad, but you're like frustrated.
He'd probably just approach it with a different attitude.
Yeah, but I wonder, because there's just something about sport. It's almost like war, even though it's not the same. But
this is the closest analog we have, right?
Yeah, it's like there's this innate human responses to things that are really hard to not have. And I know that, like, we do a pretty good job of like being pretty chill, but yeah, it's be interesting to see Jesus play touch.
Yeah,
like, yeah, no worries.
He might, it might be that he would do it, but he wouldn't fully understand the appeal of it. You know?
Yeah, why do you enjoy this so much?
Yeah. why is this so enjoyable? Because it is like war, and in a world without war, you wouldn't have the desire to do competitive sports, would you?
It's the challenge, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, can I do it? But
I don't know.
But even is connected to Lordship of Brothers.
We know that he was born with the nature of Adam, right? So without our human nature, would he understand the desire for competitive sports? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he would fully understand why it's enjoyable, but I don't see why he wouldn't get involved.
I don't play sport because it's competitive. I play sport because it's good exercise and you're there with your mates. That's why I play sport.
Yeah,
but just the nature of the game makes it competitive. So even though I'm not there to be competitive, I find myself tearing my hair out sometimes going, how did you not see the forward pass?
That's right. Yep.
Anyway.
That's a good question. I like that. I like that. Okay, so what hymn or worship song can you not stand?
He touched me. That one needs to be taken out.
You're banned.
Take it out. It didn't age well.
AdSafe still approves of this.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. I don't know. There are definitely hymns that just are really...
The ones with more than five verses. Just any of them, banned.
You don't have to band it. Just take out a verse.
Yeah. First, second, and last. Please just sing first, second, and last.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Because we don't do a lot of hymns. Our church doesn't have that, like, ingrained, pretty much. So if the music coordinator isn't, like, onto it, they're just like, oh, yeah, we'll do this song. Or, like, the pastor requests a song because it's, like, topical.
Yeah.
But then they don't review it.
No one knows
like
the song.
Eight verses later, we're all like,
Yeah, we had someone do a music at Bush Church, and they brought a list of songs. And me and Jacob were looking at the songs, and one of them was "He Touched Me," and we both looked at each other. We're like, "We're not doing that, are we? No, I gotta tell him no. Sorry, pick another song. We're not doing that one." I love hymns. I really, really enjoy them. When everybody's singing, because I have the worst singing voice. But I enjoy singing.
You want them to drown
singing.
You out, yes.
But I hate singing when I can hear myself.
Yeah.
Because I sound terrible. But when everybody is singing and I can sing loudly, oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Love it.
I remember when I went to...
And that only works with songs that everybody knows.
Yes.
And that's why hymns are great.
Hymns are great for that.
Yeah.
I went to AYC in 2009 and the, you know, these conferences, they have a theme song, right? And... the theme song for this one was "Go Light Your World," and at the beginning, you could everyone's singing like because half of people don't know the song, you know. Like by halfway through, people have got it and they're singing it. And by the last day, people are like blasting it out, and there's like 800 people in a room just like shouting this song down to the front, and like that experience of like writing all of that. The energy was amazing. It was kind of actually, it was funny. A good friend of mine that was there, he's a very musically talented guy. And at the beginning of it, he was making fun of the song choice. He's like, oh, it's a really corny song. Like, you know, he said, like, I get it. The message is there, but like, it's really corny. And then by the end of it, like, he's one of the ones just like belting it out, like, really. I'm like, yeah, it got under your skin, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't have a bad one per se, but. I do have a song recommendation that I've been enjoying lately. Yeah.
Yes.
"Den of Thieves" by Munn and Dylan Styles. But yeah, go check that one out.
Okay. You have to drop that one in the group chat because I'm no way I'm going to
remember. Yeah, I'll play
that.
I'll play it after the podcast.
Yeah, very good.
It's good song.
Very cool. All right. Well, we are almost at the end. There's two left. One is for Christian dad. So Emerson, we're going to have to hold this one up here. Being a Christian dad, what did nobody tell you?
Lots of things.
I really like that game I love the way you think of things. Like your date ideas with Jasmine and then like the way you play with the kids.
That's cool.
I'm not creative like that, but I hear you do that. I'm like, that's
fine. You can have my ideas if you like them.
No, I don't.
They're yours.
You need a list of things, like Emerson's ideas. Yes.
Make a podcast just Emerson's
praise
ideas.
Praise God. I can do that if you want me to. I think I was told a lot of things that were helpful for sure. I think I came into it with a few expectations that were just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And no one could have told me that I was wrong because then nobody knew. They were my expectations. Like I expected my kids to be like me.
Yes. That's what I was going to say. I was literally,
It would be so much easier because I understand myself well.
Yes.
And I would be able to understand them, but nope.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was literally what I was. Another one that I would say is that, and again, this isn't directly like spiritually related, but the fact that children are like so different from one another, like you actually don't want to be like if you're going to be a good dad, you actually can't afford to be fair to two children.
Mm.
Fairness is actually really not helpful.
It's pretty much
you know,
it's impossible.
It's impossible. So don't even try.
Yeah, and it does. It creates. What can I say? Like
competition,
a boundary that you can't really pass.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. There was one ice block left in the freezer today. And after lunch, they were allowed to pick something if they, you know, and anyway, oh, can we have an ice block? Like, yeah, if you want, you know, and oh, there's only one left. Oh, there's only one left. And they were like, oh, and Josiah's like, Seth, leave it in, like, leave it in the fridge. Daddy, you have to get more, make more ice blocks, and then we'll have it because then we can have one each. And so, like, no one is having this one, right? And I was like, is there another way that we could solve this problem? And both kids thought about it for a second. Josiah looks back at me. Yeah, cut it in half.
The Solomon method.
Yes. And I'm like,
fight for it.
I said, this is actually great. This is an opportunity. And they both stopped and looked at me like, how is it an opportunity? I said, one of you has the opportunity to act like Jesus right now. And Josiah frowns. He goes, cut it in half.
No.
Seth,
I'm not getting nothing out of this.
Seth just quietly walks over to the table and just puts it down in front of Josiah and comes back and sits down. And I just sort of like high-fived him under the table. I'm like, that was good. That was solid. I was appreciating that, you know. But it was just so funny. Like, yes, developmentally, they're at different stages. They're 2.5 years apart. But it was just like, just I was like, just cut it in half, man. Like, come on, there's a solution. I'm like, that would be fair, but that's just reinforcing this idea.
Was Josiah upset that Seth didn't get any?
No.
Yeah, there you go.
No remorse. Yeah. Oh, actually, he was grateful though. He goes, oh, thank you, Seth. Like that was, he did not expect Seth to, you know, respond in the way that he did. So that was cool.
Yeah, I've been lately they've gotten to the age now that I can ask them to do stuff for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you go to the fridge and get me a banana?
Yeah.
You know, and they can go to the fridge and bring me a banana. It's great. You know, can you go grab I can't find my other boot. Oh, there it is. Can you grab it for me? You know? And I've started asking them to do stuff for each other. So Audrey will come to me and say, oh, Daddy, can I have this? And I say, sure. I said, Flo, can you get it for Audrey?
Mm-hmm.
And she'll grab it for her. And I'll say, all right, you know, you say thank you to Flo, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've been getting them to do stuff for each other.
That's great.
Which has been awesome.
Mm.
It's been fantastic.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have our last question to round out our episode. And that is, what would you tell your 16-year-old self about faith? I'm trying to place myself at 16.
Same. It's a tough question. I don't know that I still fully get it.
No, but I certainly get it more than I got it at 16.
An interesting thing happened to me. I think I told you during the teen class, but I hurt my back really bad. Yeah. At work, like just fully destroyed my back to the point that I could barely move, agonizing pain. And I was like, I'm going to have to take some time off work and get this sorted out. Like, this is because I sprained my back before at the top. Near my shoulders. This was in my glute and lower back on the same side of my back, which I've always had issues with. And I was like, it's happened again and I'm going to have to get a, you know, therapist and then blah, 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 you know, get it all sorted out like I did last time. And I prayed for healing, right? But I didn't believe that God would heal me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I was like, I'll pray for healing because that's what Christians are supposed to do.
I'm supposed to do that, yeah.
Then the next morning, after a night of no sleep because I was in so much pain, like the night before, I couldn't get my pants off. I had to lay prostrate on the bed and get my wife to pull my pants off. The kids come in. Daddy, are you better? No, I'm in lots of pain. And I said, can you pray for me? And so they both said little prayers for me, for my back. And I was healed.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
I got up and I put my pants on.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't believe I just did that.
Yeah.
And I went out and I was like, I'm feeling much better. And it wasn't until like a half hour later I realized, I was like, my goodness, I've been healed.
Yeah.
And it's because of the prayers of my kids.
Mm.
Because they had faith.
Mm-hmm.
Way stronger than mine.
Yeah.
And that is a lesson in faith that I've been needing to have for a really long time.
Mm. Yeah, that's
so. I'd probably tell my 16-year-old self that story.
Hmm. I knew the right answers. Like, I could have told you why Jesus came. I could, you know, at 16, sure. Like, you know, I'd seen all the prophecy seminars and whatever. But I really think that I was operating reactively at that point. Like, I wasn't it wasn't in, I hadn't internalized it, I don't think. And so I think trying to get me to do anything probably would have just been a bit of a waste of energy. But I think what I would tell myself is that there would be nothing that I could do to get God to love me any more than he already did.
Mm-hmm.
That it was, you know, fundamentally that is the kind of God that God is. Because some of the things that I got wrong in my faith later, like if I had have had that more solidly entrenched in my mind beforehand, I don't think I would have, you know, gone off on some of those theological tangents that were unhelpful. It's probably where I would have been.
Mm.
Well, that brings us to the end of all of our Claude or Anthropic questions. So that was a bit of fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was cool. So thank you so much for joining us for this episode. As we often do, we want to encourage you that if you don't have this sort of a thing in your life where you don't have a group of believers that you can do life with and chat about these kind of questions, go find someone. We've just given you a list of questions that you can use in your life as well. So invite your friends over. Say, there's a bunch of these really strange questions and I want to hear what you have to say about them. And just invite your friends over, have a conversation. It'll be the best. Take a selfie, send it to us and we'll share it on the show. So
absolutely.
Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week. God bless.
And that's the end of another episode. Just before I head off, I want to encourage you to go over to our page on Facebook and also our account on Instagram and follow us there, because that is where we interact with our listeners and we would love for you to enter in and join the conversation. Also, while you're signing up, I would also recommend signing up to our mailing list on our website, oztabletalk.com.au. If you do that, you will receive our exclusive content, because occasionally we do release exclusives and they only go out to our mailing list. So I would strongly recommend you go and sign up for that. If you have a few more minutes to be one of the most amazing listeners on the planet, you can go over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review, because reviews help us to grow and they help other people to find us. So if you want to help us reach those goals, please jump in and give us a review. The final message that I'd like to leave you with is to let you know about our Patreon account. Now, Patreon is a way for creators to get paid for creating, and ultimately what we do does cost money to get us hosted and have the services that we need to run the podcast. And so if you'd like to help us do that, jump over onto patreon.com/OzTableTalk, and you can give anything from even $1 a month upwards. But at different levels, there are different benefits, different rewards that we want to give you just to say thank you for being an amazing supporter of ours. If you can't afford that, we would just gratefully accept your prayers, because that is what our ministry runs on. And so with that, I will leave you to your day, and thank you so much for listening to this episode. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.